The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
What's up? This is the Talking the Star podcast. I'm your host, Connor Livesey, here today with my co-host, Dalton Miller. It's just us two today. We're live in Mobile, Alabama at the Reese Senior Bowl. First off, we want to apologize for being absent for, I guess it's been about 2 weeks now.
Listen, I've just been too sad, man.
Yeah, we've just been depressed. So we took 2 weeks off. We're here. We've moved on. We're not even going to talk about the playoff game today because we've moved on to the draft.
It's over. It didn't even happen, if you ask me.
Didn't happen. The draft is going to happen, and that's why we're in Mobile, Alabama at the 2019 Reese Senior Bowl to get a grip on some of these players that the Cowboys have a chance at drafting here come in April. We got a jump start on some of these guys, some of the top seniors, redshirt juniors in this class. Got a good live look at them today, saw their measurable weigh-ins, got to talk to them at media day, and then got to watch them in practice. And this whole podcast is going to be a day one practice review of the Senior Bowl players from both the North and the South team. We're going to talk about some of the guys we liked. We're going to kind of combine the two teams and go from there. We can't talk about both teams separately or we'll be here all night. So we got a lot of work to do tonight, so we're going to knock this thing out. It was a cold, rainy, windy day today.
God, it was and I said this on Twitter. I said what we really needed today was we needed Ladd Peebles, which is the stadium here at South Alabama, to be Tropicana Field. And last week, I needed Ladd Peebles to be down in Tampa for so I could be outside, because the weather in St. Pete last week was phenomenal. And I get here where it's an outside venue and it's cold, rainy, and windy.
It's
not a good combination for us.
Weather looks even worse tomorrow, so we're going to cross our fingers and hopefully that storm passes and we're able to have a good, warm, clear day of football practices at the Senior Bowl. But let's dive into this thing. It's going to be a long podcast. We hope you guys are interested in the draft. Obviously, if you're interested in the Cowboys, you better be interested in the draft, because that's a whole lot of reason why your team's good right now is because they drafted well.
So that's really the only reason why your team's good, because other than, you know, Antoine Woods and obviously Amari Cooper, there's nobody else that really isn't homegrown. I mean, Alan Hearns, I mean, he did a little bit for us, but not too much. Yeah. Did we draft Blake Jarwin?
Yeah, or he's an undrafted free agent.
Yeah, but we got him first.
And some of these guys, you know, they might not get drafted. But
and that's the important part, and that's something that we saw today is specifically, and something that I saw last week in St. Pete is, you know, these scouts coming up and trying to build these relationships with fringe guys, especially the quarterbacks. I saw a couple teams today with Trace McSorley, somebody who is probably not going to be drafted, but can definitely be, because of his skill set, because of his leadership ability, will probably end up making a team somewhere. If not a team, he will be on a practice squad somewhere.
The Cooper Rush. of the 2019 NFL draft.
A little bit more athletic, but, you know.
Yeah. All right, so look, we're going to go position by position. We're each going to give a player that we like today. We're going to keep it all positive since we have been heartbroken due to the Cowboys' loss in the championship round. But we're going to...
And I felt like during practice we were so negative that we should probably just try to be nice for a little while.
Yeah. All right, so I'll let you start it off. What quarterback today between the two teams did you think, and we're going to do this not really in a guy who played the best, because that might be a little too obvious at times. So we're going to go with like more of impressive.
Yeah.
And some of it's going to be the best, because I might have had different expectations than you did coming into it. Mm-hmm. So a quarterback that impressed you today between the two teams, who was
it? So somebody who was very, very highly thought of on draft Twitter in the offseason was quarterback from Auburn, Jarrett Stidham. Somebody who, he was quarterback one for quite a few people in the offseason because they saw the flashes of his arm, what he was able to do in huge games last year for a team that was quite good. And it's something that we did not see this year. Now, the offense just overall was not as good there in Auburn. And it's not the kind of offense that you really are going to see a quarterback thrive in statistically. But today you saw some of those NFL-level throws that you saw from him last year. And you saw from him at times this season as well. Now, there are issues with his game, absolutely. But an event like the Senior Bowl, where you don't really have to worry about pressure, mm-hmm. because you're not going to get crushed. And that's why I think that we will also see guys like Drew Locke have a really good day, because Drew Locke's areas of issue are his footwork. And when you don't have to worry about the pressure, you're able to stand in there and stand strong and deliver footballs. And I thought that that's something that Jarrett Stidham, especially when he was going up against air, because we like to think that these guys are supposed to come up and throw all these routes and hit him directly in the chest. It's what we say about Dak Prescott all the time when he is under center and he's throwing to guys who are open in zones. And he misses the ball placement by a little. I mean, there's guys, and I watched it last week, Easton Stick couldn't hit a slant route half the time. Like, it's just not as easy as the elite quarterbacks make it look.
And even we saw in the championship game, you know, even those elite Drew Brees.
Yes.
He struggled, missed
easy throws.
Yeah, and
today I thought that Jarrett Stidham really played well.
You know, and I thought about going with him because I agree, coming into it, my expectations were mediocre to below average, and I thought he did play well. I'm cheating a little bit. I mentioned, you know, picking the best player is probably not the best way, but I did go with Drew Locke, and that's because when I watched him sitting in the airport this morning at 3 a.m., I saw him make some very incredible throws, you know, in the deeper part of the field. And I thought today we didn't see a lot of the deeper third of the field being used in the passing game. It was a lot of checkdowns. It was a lot of, you know, stuff over the middle for, you know, those 7 to 10 yard gains. But I saw Locke be able to attack downfield vertically. He fit a few balls in nicely along the boundary, deep, you know, vertical routes, nine routes. And I thought that he improved. Like you said, it's hard to judge footwork, it's hard to judge mechanics in these settings because you're not dealing with pressure. But I did like when they did go to team and there were guys coming at him, not necessarily going to sack him, he did do a little maneuvering in the pocket, was able to step up. His footwork was a lot better today than it was on some of the games that I'd watched this morning. So as long as he keeps making those improvements, he's got a chance to talk himself into, you know, that first quarterback being drafted. I know that might sound a little ridiculous, but you get a guy, his measurables, you know, I think he measured in at 6'5", 225 pounds a day, you know, large hands. The physical specimen of Drew Locke.
No, he did not have large hands.
He had small hands?
Locke had small hands, but that's okay. The hand size thing is weird. I think that he's fine.
Do you have his hand?
His hands, I believe, were 9 inches on the dot.
Okay.
So they're small. But
yeah, that is on the smaller side.
The dude can sling it.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, for sure. But his, you know, his measurables are impressive. His arm talent's impressive.
And he's a good athlete. Yeah. That's something that isn't talked about enough when we talk about Drew Locke, is he can get out of the pocket and pick up yards when he needs to.
I really enjoyed hearing him talk today too. You kind of just
he sounds like a quarterback.
Quarterback, yeah. You know, kind of just confident, you know, but isn't like a douchey confident. You know, he's a very open, you know, team-oriented, confident guy. So I liked what I heard him talk. I liked what I saw on the field, and I hope that progresses throughout the week. Who do you got at running back? Who impressed you?
At running back, I had a small school guy, Wes Hill from Slippery Rock. And admittedly, I didn't see a lot during the team run. But I did see one play in particular where it was an outside zone to the left. And it was blocked decently well. They gave him a cutback lane. He stayed patient. It opened up. And he exploded through that hole. And it would have been, you know, a touchdown here because it's just, you know, linebackers and linemen. There was no safeties or corners or anything to take him out later. But he stayed patient. He hit the hole, exploded through it. And he showed a little bit of burst there. And, you know, he's somebody who came in at a decent size as well. I want to look at it here real quick because this paper I have to flip over, which I hate having to do. But, you know, he came in at just over, you know, 6.5 feet, so not 6 and 6.5 feet, so he wasn't 6'6". He was 6'5".
6006.
And 210. So he's definitely big enough. And like I said, with that from a couple of these other running backs this week.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I did like what I saw from him today. And as you mentioned, it wasn't like it was consistent, but the good things outweighed the bad things. Yeah. And you saw a lot of talented, you know, traits from him.
And I do want to just quickly say, and I said this on my podcast when I was talking about the Shrine game, is that running backs in these All-Star games is difficult.
It is.
Because you don't really get to see how they get hit. You don't see the contact balance that they possess. I mean, these are the big times where those guys that run the ball 250 times in college but have 3 catches throughout their career, that's who this is geared towards, because they catch a lot of footballs in these settings.
Yeah.
And that's the value that you can get from running backs here.
Definitely. Going with another, I guess you can consider it a small school guy, is Ryquell Armstead, Temple running back. I thought he did kind of similar things to the guy you mentioned. You know, it wasn't like run after run, he was just hitting home runs, but he caught the ball well, and he had 2 or 3 runs that really just caught my attention, caught my eye, you know, had some bursts at the line of scrimmage to hit the hole and, you know, hit it and go. And, you know, with those backs that are smaller school guys, I think that extra added burst is important, because if you're not a big guy, you have to be able to hit the hole, see it, and go. And that's something I saw from the Temple running back, Armstead. You know, he was able to make a few plays. It really just made me go, wow, who's that? You know, that's the thing. In these first days, a lot of the time it's, who is that? And that's the thing that you're talking about. You know, it might not be, you know, you're still kind of learning the helmets. You're still kind of learning the jersey numbers. You don't know who everyone is on the field yet. And you see somebody make a play and you have to go back to your roster and check the number and the school and the name and make sure you got it right. And those are the guys that I seem to jot down today. At receiver, who'd you end up going with?
At receiver, I went with Buffalo wide receiver Anthony Johnson. And I thought that what I saw from him in tape, and I haven't finished his evaluation yet because I just got the coach's film for Buffalo. But what I saw from him in the broadcast film is that he's a strong receiver. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Michael Gallup, to where he can kind of fight off and through contact and then win at the point of separation or win deeper later in vertical routes. And then he is tough at the catch point. He's not an elite leaper or somebody who will necessarily go above the rim to catch passes, but he's somebody who can separate late. He can use his upper body to create separation on routes coming back to the ball. You know, not the most twitched up guy in the world, doesn't have the most long speed, but just knows how to get open and catch the football. And that's something that we saw from a couple guys today, and even some of the bigger names not consistently catching the football. And I didn't see that issue with Anthony Johnson today.
Yeah, you know, you kind of mentioned it. You know, his hands were reliable. Not a guy who creates a ton of separation, but he's able to win in the ways to where he doesn't have to create that consistent separation. I went with a guy who did create a ton of separation. That's Georgia State's Penny Hart. He is a kind of opposite of the guy you were talking about. Small guy, 5'8", 170 is what I want to say he weighed in at. But, man, you talk about a guy who gets open consistently, can catch the ball away from his frame, knows how to kind of use his smaller frame to shade defenders at the catch point. And one thing that I know me and you both noticed is when they were doing the change of direction, sink your hips drill with the four cones, four corners, he just absolutely destroyed that drill. You saw him go, and then we saw Louisville Jalen Smith go, and it was just a completely different rep. It looked like they were running two different things because of how low, how good of flexibility in his hips and his ankles and his knees. He's able to just sink his hips, and that is so huge when creating separation. And I thought he did good things down the field as well. He ran a couple nice, deeper post routes across the middle. He had one at the end there where he was absolutely wide open. The ball was thrown a little bit low. He adjusted well to it, hauled it in, and it was either an incomplete pass or a fumble. We couldn't really tell, but he made a good adjustment to it, but just wasn't able to finish that play. So that's something I want to see him improve on. But he didn't have any drops. Other than that one that was kind of a really nice play for him to adjust his body, he created tons of separation. He ran a really nice post-corner route, got open, but the ball was overthrown. So a guy who just got open, and I think a lot of people expected Andy Isabella to come in and Hunter Renfrow to come in and just be that dominant slot guy. But I think between those three guys, Penny Hart was just as good, if not better, than those two guys today. And I think he deserves a ton of credit. And I think you could see him start walking his way up some draft boards here soon. Tight end was kind of a slow day today, if I had to...
Quickly, I just want to talk about Hart real quick. Hart surprised me because he's not somebody who I had seen coming into this today. And I was very impressed with what I saw from him. I also have one more announcement to make. Defensive tackle Kalen Saunders decided to stay here. His fiance was going into labor, and he is now a father. So I'd like to congratulate him, if he ever listens to this podcast. If you guys are on Twitter, you'll know him for he is the guy who is over 300 pounds and can do standing backflips. That's how he got his claim to fame recently, even though he's been a good football player for a really long time.
Yep, another small school guy.
Yeah, another small school guy. My tight end, like you said, kind of a slow day for tight ends. Tight ends are kind of tough here as well because they have to do dual duty between, blocking and run in the run game. So you don't always see them during 1v1 drills when it comes to receiving. But one guy I was totally surprised by, because I didn't really know much about him coming in, even though I've seen a lot of West Virginia watching Will Greer a little bit, and then obviously David Sills and Gary Jennings, but Trevon Wesco, and he is like 6'3", 270. I mean, he is absolutely massive in weight, but when you look at him, there's no sloppiness to it. It doesn't look like he's somebody who is going to be 270.
And he even lined up at fullback.
And he did play some fullback too. So that means, guess what? You get to get rid of Olawale if you're us. And you're going to see more fullback now. Mm-hmm. You're going to see more fullback with Jason Garrett calling the plays. So I'm cool with that. And it looked like he had some decent pop at the point of attack when he was blocking, when he was filling hole, or when he was a lead blocker. He showed good hands on most of the routes that I saw him run. And I even watched him run that patented Cole Beasley whip route.
Oh boy.
And he sat down, sunk his hips, and absolutely dusted Juwan Thornhill, the safety from Virginia.
Yeah, I think the most impressive thing with him was able to see him line up at different spots.
Yes.
The versatility is huge, especially when you're talking about a guy that the Cowboys, like, love to move guys around.
Yeah, and it's why we liked Nick last year.
Yep.
Because Nick was able to do...
Baldwin.
Nick Baldwin. you know, because he was able to line up outside, and he was actually like running hitch routes and selling vertically against corners. Like that was fun. Unfortunately, he, you know, got hurt and was out for the year as a rookie for the Lions. But
my tight end is a guy that I've fallen in love with. You're probably starting to hear more about him. Another small school guy, Stetson tight end, if you want to call him that, Donald Parham. Look, if you're a Cowboys fan, it's probably never going to happen.
No.
Ever going to happen. He's not an inline guy. He's not going to block. But if you're looking for a guy who can line up in the slot and catch pretty much anything thrown his way, that's him. And you look at him at Stetson, and it literally looks like he's playing against a junior varsity football team, because he is 6'8", 245 pounds, and everyone else is 5'10", and looks like they had just started playing football a few years ago. And the thing that I love about him is his traits translate so well over to the next level. He has super reliable hands. He catches everything. His catch radius is bonkers. He has I think they said today that he had a 70-inch wingspan or something crazy like that. And it's just insane. He catches everything because of his catch radius, his wingspan, his hands. And he's a pretty good route runner, too, which is surprising because he's not the most fluid athlete. He takes very long strides, so he covers a lot of ground. But his short area quickness, his you know, flexibility and his legs isn't great. But he makes up for it because he has such long strides that he's able to cover so much more ground than the guys covering him. So it gets open a lot quicker. And he was a guy that I just thought, you know, coming into this, he had to show he can compete against tougher competition. I thought he did that today. And then some, in my opinion. Offensive line, we got a few more guys, two more guys to go through on the offensive side of the ball before we break, come back, and then cover the defensive side of the ball. Who was the offensive lineman that stood out to you?
Two more. We have one more.
Oh, sorry.
Man,
well, me and you is two.
Oh, okay. I get
one more position, two more guys.
This, listen, we're being very, very calm with each other. We fought in the stands for about 6 hours today, so we might be fought out a little bit here. Now, my offensive lineman is probably going to be the same as your offensive lineman, and it's just because there's nobody else that you could put there.
Yeah,
Caleb McGarry from Washington. And the dude is, first of all, he's like a legitimate 6'8". I'm going to look up his.
6'8", 324 is what I think it was.
So McGarry ended up being 6'6", 7", 321. So 6'7", because 6'6", 7" is 6'6" and 7/8 of an inch. So 6'7". So a legitimate 6'7", 320 plus pounds. And he put people on their faces.
Like rep after rep.
And we were pretty much focusing on the skill guys on the opposite side, going through 7-on-7s and 1-on-1s. But we'd look over and someone would be going to the ground and McGarry would be falling on top of them to finish them. I mean, it was something else. And I really can't wait to get to the XOS film room and actually watch how he did it. Because what I did see from him is a couple times he literally just kind of like did the defensive move and just push-pulled guys to the ground and then, you know, obviously did the whole thing where you teabag the defender and lay on top of him. But when you're that big and you're able to shoot your legs like that to allow them to fall on your feet without taking yourself out, I mean, we really saw some athletic ability from him today. And he's somebody who, listen, I don't watch a lot of Pac-12 until I absolutely have to. It's just an entire conference that I really can't stand. And I didn't watch a lot of Washington because of their quarterback. So somebody who I'm going to have to just toughen up. I'm going to have to get to that Gaskin evaluation. And I'm going to have to get to the McGarry evaluation, because I'll tell you what, today really showed me that I am completely missing out on a very good offensive tackle prospect. And you just do not see those guys grow on trees.
Yeah, and like Dalton said, you know, we didn't spend a lot of time watching the offensive linemen. There's a ton of guys here. I did like what I saw in spurts of Andre Dillard. He did get beat with some power sometimes by a guy we're going to talk about here in a second. So we're going to take our first break, come back, and then talk about the defensive side of the ball, a position that the Cowboys had a ton of success with this year but could potentially add another piece or two to make that defense even better. So we'll be right back after our first break. We're talking the star. We'll be right back. Back on the Talking the Star podcast. I'm your host, Connor Livesey, here with my co-host today, Dalton Miller. Follow us both on Twitter at ConnorNFLDraft and at Dalton B. Miller. Make sure you're following all of our work on Blogging the Boys. Dalton does his blue chip scouting as well as some other Cowboys content at a few other websites. So make sure you check that out. Check out all our draft content that we're putting out this week as well as along the rest of the draft season. So I know the Cowboys aren't playing, but as we mentioned beforehand, all these players that we're watching today, some of them will 100% end up on the Cowboys. So make sure you're familiar with them all and diving into these guys with us.
Yeah, so we're going to go to defense now, right?
Defense.
We're going to go with somebody who should absolutely be a Cowboy next year. Texas A&M, one technique, defensive tackle, Daylon Mack. Who, if you live in Texas, you probably know because this guy is a former five-star recruit, went to Texas A&M as, you know, obviously a highly touted guy. Talked to him today during the media day portion of the day, and he, unfortunately, is a Patriots fan. So we're not going to hold it completely against him because the rest of his family are huge Cowboys fans, and we asked how he'd feel about that, and he said that he really believed he would be more excited to play for the Cowboys than they would be just because he knows how important that would be to them. Now, I really wanted to talk about him because this is the guy that I saw at the Shrine game last week absolutely ball out and get the call up here. And now, his partner at Texas A&M, Kiki Kinsley, was already here. And so having both of them here and having that relationship and both being on that defensive line, those two are attached to the hip here and both playing well. But it's nice to see the guy that didn't get this invite to start showing out and absolutely balling out. I mean, there was one play today where he pushed Ross Pierzbacher, the center from Alabama, straight back into the ground. Mack's first step off the snap is absolutely ridiculous for someone who is 325 pounds. And now, yes, he's a one technique, so the Cowboys aren't going to draft him high. That's absolutely true.
He's probably not a...
And the Cowboys already have a one technique. That is also true. But it is 100% true that fat guys need breathers. And if you have 2-1 techniques that can explode through gaps, if you can keep them fresh, that means that you're able to get a pass rush from your big guys and still be able to stop the run. I talked to him. He said that he would much rather be a gap penetrating one tech than somebody who is supposed to or asked to 2-gap more often. Let him penetrate and let him be that disruptor that he wants to be and that he can be.
And I got another penetrating guy that can probably play both spots, the one and the three, and that's Rennell Wren, Arizona State defensive tackle. He's a very physical, impressive guy. I'm not sure his exact measurables, but I know at Arizona State he was like 6'5", 295. I mentioned Dalton's looking it up now, but
He is 6'0", 4'4", 315.
Yeah, so he's a guy that not
but
only...
But he can play three tech.
Oh, he is a three tech. Yeah. I think his first step is just absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. He's just in his tape at Arizona State was just a little inconsistent. He would have spurts where he looked like a dominant pass rusher, and then it would kind of disappear. He doesn't really have counter moves, but man, his first step explosion. He does have a swim and a rip move that he's able to win with at the snap. But he's a lot of fun, man, and he's a guy that, you know, kind of reminds me a little bit of what we saw out of Malik Collins coming out of Nebraska. Just a guy that can get up the field, can get in the backfield and affect the quarterback. First step is just absolutely unreal. Super explosive guy. So he's a guy that I'm kind of interested in. Could be around in that, you know, second, third, fourth round. Would be a huge, huge upgrade, I think, at the three technique and be able to play the one as well. So not only can he slide over at the three and rush the passer, but as you were just talking about, when Antoine Woods needs a breather, you put Malik in at the three, you put Rennell in at the one, and you're not missing much of a beat. And I think that would be huge in terms of not only the flexibility and versatility, but just being able to add a guy that can get in the backfield, live in the backfield, and really disrupt the quarterback.
Real quick, breaking news, we have the top five speeds from the Senior Bowl today. That is being done by Zebra Technology, and it's something that's really, really cool. They'll track the speed of the players, the speed of passes that are thrown, and they'll give you the numbers of how many passes are thrown over 50 miles an hour, 40 miles an hour, 30 miles an hour. They have some really cool technology, and it's really fun to see that after these practices have concluded. Today's five fastest players, the first one was Terry McLaurin, who is a wide receiver from Ohio State. He ran 22.2 miles an hour, which would be the fastest in the NFL this past season. The next one is Corey Ballantyne, who is a Washburn DB. He's 5'11", 188. He ran 21.6 miles an hour. And then we have Jordan Brown from South Dakota State, who is 6 foot and 6, so 6006, 200 pounds on the dot. He ran 20.7. You have Connor's guy, Penny Hart, ran 20.6 miles an hour. And then USC's Iman Marshall ran 19.9 miles an hour. Now, we are going to move to defensive ends or edge rushers. And my guy is Montez Sweat.
That's my guy as well, so we can knock him out in one go.
And Montez Sweat is a winner in a couple ways today. He won the weigh-in. He was tall. He was long. He met thresholds for size. He was, I believe, 255 pounds, if I remember correctly.
Freaky length, too.
And he is freaky long. Yes, he was 252 pounds. And then he came out in practice, and he used that length, and he strong-armed or long-armed dudes straight into oblivion, which means he held up against the run. He was able to get a push and put offensive tackles on skates back into the quarterback just using one arm, which allows him to still capture the edge against the run. And then he was also able to put pass rush moves together when he got the opportunity to rush the passer. And there were a couple times where there were a couple blown assignments during team where he was able to absolutely, if he wanted to, he would have just destroyed quarterbacks. But later in the week, as the week goes on, it'll be interesting to see once these communication issues go away, if he is still able to be as effective when guys are actually trying to get their hands inside his breastplate.
I think the most important thing with him was his ability to show his power as well, because he's a guy that can win with speed, he's flexible, he can win with the bend, but he can also just, like you said, put his arms on top of your chest plate and just push you back into the quarterback. And when you have that blend of power, speed, length, it's just tough to defend that at the next level. And I think that we saw Titans head coach Mike Vrabel really locked in on him. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he's there and Tennessee's on the clock if that's their pick, because every time he stepped up, Vrabel perked up a little bit, you know, put his notes down and picked his eyes up and was very locked in on him. And, you know, that's a guy that he's not going to be around when the Cowboys pick. You know, but he's a guy that we both really, really like today. You know, he's gonna be a lot of fun to watch on Sundays here soon, and I don't think it's gonna take him long to start making an impact.
Yeah, my next guy is David Long, linebacker from West Virginia.
Killing me. Just dropping my guys.
And I'm going to let Connor talk about him because I took Montez Sweat from him as well.
So David Long is a guy that I wrote about on Blogging the Boys last week as a potential target for the Cowboys, who coming in this week, he's a tough evaluation because he's undersized. He doesn't do a lot of things in coverage.
And I want to say he met a huge threshold today at being over 230 pounds because he's listed at 222, so he has gained a little bit of weight.
What was his height?
Let me look at it.
But while he's looking for that, he's a guy that was listed at 5'11", 225 before the weigh-ins today, so it looked like he added some mass to his frame, which was huge. But you're talking about a guy that just shoots gaps at a level I don't know if I've ever seen before. I put it in the article that I wrote that he may be the best gap-shooting linebacker I have ever evaluated in college football. He's just so quick. He's so explosive. And when he hits you, it looks like a freight train just ran over a deer because he's just – and he's not a big guy. That's the thing, is he just has so much pop in his hands and his pads that when he hits you, it looks like it hurts. The guys feel that. And he's just a ton of fun to watch. The Tennessee game, he made some plays shooting gaps that just really, really blew my mind. And I don't know where he's going to land because of his size, because of his lack of ability to cover in man. He might be a guy that slips a little bit. But if you're looking for a guy that can come forward and play the run, maybe be a key special teams player, he's a guy I really have my eye on in that fourth, fifth round if he's still around. And if he keeps playing the way he is, he's going to go much earlier than that.
Yeah, he's somebody that I really liked. He was flying around quite a bit today during practices. My corner is Iman Marshall from USC. Is that who you had as well?
Yeah. But the corners didn't.
I'll let you talk about him. But well, I wanted to say this is he's somebody who I, off of his film last year, was extremely low on. I thought that he should have went back to school. I believe that he was practically undraftable last year. I haven't gotten into his film yet this season, but I thought that he played pretty well today overall. I don't know how you feel about how he did, but I felt like he carried vertical routes well. He was able to flip his hips fluidly and gain depth and stay even with guys. And he actually even made a couple plays on balls. He wasn't able to bring them in. The wide receivers played defensive back quite well to break stuff up. But I felt like he had a pretty good day today. I'm going to let you talk a little bit more about him, though.
Yeah, kind of what we talked about earlier with the running backs. He was a guy that, I'm not going to say made a ton of plays, but it was always, who is that? Was that Iman Marshall? What number was he? What helmet was he wearing? Because he flashed a ton of times. He would knock a ball away. He would come up and, you know, there's a few times in the run defense portion where he would come up and run support and you would just hear the hit that he would put on you. And there's not a whole lot of big hitting going on, but he flashed a ton today. And like Dalton said, it's partly due to the expectations I had coming in, because coming into this, similar to what Dalton said, you know, I saw a late-round guy that had impressive size and pretty impressive length.
And I believe he was a high 4- or 5-star recruit coming out of school,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and he was one of the, I think, one of the guys on your speed track that you were talking about that ran
19.9,
so,
yes.
You know, a good athlete, a guy with good size. He was pretty inconsistent as far as his coverage went at USC, so hopefully he's working on that and improving on that, and he can be a guy that can help his draft stock with a good week here down in Mobile. Safety.
I have Darnell Savage, safety from Maryland. This is a guy who I believe can be the perfect cover to safety. I don't think that he's a single high guy, because I think that on his film I've seen too many times where he is too quick to come up and cut off routes underneath when he is supposed to be in his deep third. Now, I also watched him playing against Ohio State when I was going through Haskins' film, and he came down from a too high look. They shifted over to cover three. And when they shifted to cover three post-snap, he came down into the hook to curl. There was a tight end that was coming into the middle on a quick hitch route. He came off of that because he saw what Haskins was doing with his eyes. He saw what his defense was doing. He saw that the outside linebacker, the nickel corner, whoever it was, I can't remember if it was a linebacker or what personnel they were in. But he shot out to the flat, and he knows that Haskins loves that curl route in that situation. He likes that easy read, easy throw, pitch catch on that quick 8-yard curl. So he shot that, tipped it, got the pick, and they returned it for six. That's the kind of plays that you can get from Darnell Savage. And guess what? The Dallas Cowboys are looking for another safety. I don't think they're going to be able to pay Earl Thomas enough money to bring him in at this point. It's just not looking like that with all the contracts that the Cowboys are going to have to pay for. Where is that money for a 29-year-old safety? And Xavier Woods can do it. He's one of the guys. But if you can get another safety that is going to be a ball hawk, Darnell Savage might just be that guy.
Yeah, and I'm going to go a little bit different direction as far as the safeties went, because I really like what I saw today from Mike Edwards, a Kentucky safety, a guy who I haven't watched coming into this week. So I was really just, really watching him. I was surprised because I hadn't heard a whole lot about him, and I kept seeing him make plays. I kept seeing him get in front of passes. I kept seeing him knock the football away, come up and run support. I actually thought he was playing linebacker for a little bit because he came up and filled in the run gaps a few times. It really made some nice plays against the run. And if the Cowboys are looking to add a safety, it might be to spell Jeff Heath a little bit as a strong safety, so a guy that can play in the box, that can be pretty decent in coverage, but also, more importantly, come inside the box and maybe not give up a 4th-and-7 run to a quarterback that shouldn't pick up 10 yards on 4th-and-7. But we're not going to talk about that because we're on to the draft. But yeah, I really like what I saw from Mike Edwards, Kentucky safety today, a guy who kind of almost looks like a linebacker, a bigger guy, that showed some coverage ability today, came up, made some plays against the run. He really flashed, like I said, that's a word we keep using. A guy flashes. Guys that we're seeing that flash over and over again, maybe guys who aren't making the big splash plays, but they keep showing up. And those are the guys that we like, that might not be first or second rounders, but those flashes turn into big plays. The more they see the field, the more they're on the field making plays. And those are guys that we like. So we're going to take our final break, come back. We're each going to give a guy that we're a little bit disappointed in first day of practices, and we're going to see what they do the rest of the week. A guy we want to see more from in the rest of the week that maybe didn't impress us today that maybe we thought would. So we'll be right back after our final break. We're talking the star. And we're back on the Talking the Star podcast. I'm your host, Connor Livesey, here with my co-host, Dalton Miller. Cole couldn't join us today. He's got things going on. We're live in Mobile, Alabama at the 2019 Reese's Senior Bowl, bringing you guys lots of coverage. Make sure you're following both of us on Twitter for wall-to-wall coverage on the Senior Bowl, videos, interviews, recap of the days of practice, and a lot of different stuff. We're bringing you a lot of different information, so make sure you're following both of us on Twitter at @ConnorNFLDraft, at @DaltonBMiller, and at @ColeLPatterson. Make sure you're following the podcast on Twitter at @TalkingTheStar. Make sure you're following Blogging the Boys on Twitter at @BloggingTheBoys. Shout out to Vox Media and SB Nation. You guys are doing great, great work over there. One guy. Who's that one guy that you have to see more from before this week ends?
Oh, sorry, I just saw a picture on Twitter that got me going crazy. Anyways, back to what we were talking about, Will Grier is the guy that I need to see more from. He was terrible today. And part of that is just because he's not used to playing from under center. It's not something that West Virginia ever did. And for as trivial as that may sound, for as easy as it may sound, it's a lot like throwing that slant, right? But your drop in from under center is completely different from your drop from shotgun. They're different depths, different timing, and that's something that you have to take time and be able to learn. And it's something that he obviously is not comfortable with. And not only that, but those throws on the run, especially when he was rolling to his left, were consistently behind receivers. And when you throw the ball consistently behind receivers, when you're rolling out to your left like that, guess who was behind a receiver in those situations normally?
Should be a corner.
A corner or a linebacker or something, because it's probably man coverage and they're trailing. That's not good. So you really want to see, and part of what makes Will Grier such a draw to people are those rhythm throws downfield that West Virginia used. And you're not going to see those kinds of throws here at the Senior Bowl. It's a simpler system. You're not going to see those downfield shots most of the time. So he's somebody who I want to see more from, and I'm really not expecting too much from this week. I don't really think his skill set is going to allow him to thrive in this sort of situation. But if he is able to, that's really going to show me something for his character, for that drive that he has to succeed. And I'm not trying to say that I think that he's, you know, a wimp or anything. But I'm just saying that if he is able to improve and go out of his area of comfort to succeed, that's really going to show me what kind of person he is.
Yeah, and I'm going to go... You know, it's tough because you know how much I love Daniel Jones. And I thought he did throw the football well at times.
Wait, what the hell did you just say?
I said, you know how much I love Daniel Jones. Being sarcastic, I am not a fan of Daniel Jones. But
okay, you said it like super serious.
I'm very, very low on Duke quarterback Daniel Jones. I really did bash him today. And I thought he had his ups and had his downs. I was going to list him because of how many struggles he had under center just receiving the football. He fumbled the ball, I think, 3 times today, and that's going to be an issue with him because he did a lot of his work out of shotgun at Duke. But the guy I'm going to go with, and just because I expected more from him, was Deebo Samuel. You know, a guy who could really be listed in the top 3 receivers in this draft class, depending on what you look for in these guys. And I just didn't see a lot of those flashes today that we talked about. You know, there was one instance where I want to say it was Grier that was playing quarterback that rolled out to his left, threw a ball across the middle on a intermediate crossing route. And the ball was slightly behind Deebo, but we've seen him catch that ball before a lot of the time. So it was a little bit interesting to see him not be as consistent catching the football as I saw on his South Carolina tape. He's a guy that I just want to see more from. He's a guy that I saw make a ton of plays at South Carolina. Really, his only question marks came with his health, and he was able to stay healthy in his senior year. And I really think this week's big for him because if he can prove to guys that he can make plays out of the slot, make plays outside, showcase his route running ability, his consistent hands, his catch point, you know, his catch radius, I think that's going to go a long way for him in a receiving class. It lacks that one big-time guy. So he's one that I want to see more from and really help his stock at the end of the week, and one that didn't necessarily disappoint today, but I just thought I'd see a little bit more from him. You got anything else you want to say before we get out of here?
Yeah, if you're listening to this and you saw the amount that I traded for tight end TJ Hockenson on my Twitter, just know that it was a freaking joke, people. Just know that it was a joke. I mean, I did actually do it, but it's not real life. So don't be upset at me for doing it.
He's just an awful GM. I mean...
Listen, I'm in the same area as John Gruden right now. So, listen, making bad trades is just what I'm going to do when I'm around Gruden.
That's right. All right, look, we're out of here. We're talking the star. Hey, make sure you're getting your Senior Bowl coverage for people who are on site, who are giving you the true...
The people that are here.
Yeah. Just, you know, the TV doesn't show you everything. Make sure you're getting your coverage from the people who are here, watching every play, every snap, every block, every catch, every throw. Be smart. Be smart, fans. Make sure you're getting your coverage from people who are giving you the right coverage. We're talking the Star. I'm Connor. This is Dalton. Cole will be back with us later in the week. We're live in Mobile, Alabama at the Senior Bowl. Don't miss wall-to-wall coverage of the Reese Senior Bowl. Don't miss wall-to-wall coverage of the Dallas Cowboys. We're talking the Star, and we will see you guys next time.
My name is Spencer Hall.
My name is Jason Kirk.
My name is Ryan Nanny.
And when we combine, we form
the Shutdown Fullcast.
Voltron!
I keep telling you, we're not Voltron.
The Shutdown Fullcast is technically a college football podcast, but it's also a show about
lawn care disasters,
regional grocery stores we love,
Tennessee Batman,
homeowners associations,
Bears in video games.
I mean, there's also some actual football discussion, like about coaches having huge contracts, or coaches making terrible decisions, or coaches saying really stupid things.
Or the NCAA saying really stupid things.
Yeah, there's lots of stupid things in this big, dumb, beautiful sport.
Sometimes we talk about football games.
Allegedly.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it deserves to be taken, come find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts like this one.
The Shutdown Fullcast.
It's not Voltron.